Welcome to the Florida Madcaps, your ultimate guide to experiencing fantastic and unique destinations across our magnificent state. Join us while we lead you on a journey of exploration, recreation, and conservation. The popularity of Florida's natural wonders is on the rise, and our mission is to be your go-to source for conscientious recreation. We encourage you to get out and explore these breathtaking sites and to leave them even better than you found them through individual actions and group advocacy. Join the Florida Madcaps as we discover the beauty of our incredible state together.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Florida Madcaps podcast. It's me, Ryan, aka the Florida Excursionist, and I'm here with my good friends, the legendary Sunshine State Seekers.
Good afternoon.
Yes, top of the morning.
This is not our first take on this episode, so that was kind of a inside joke from our last recording. Anyways, today we are talking about Marjorie Kennan Rawlings State Park in Cross Creek, some of Florida's very important heritage. I volunteer there. Last year I did it a lot. Now I'm doing it occasionally. But you guys have been there as well, haven't you?
Yes, we have. Quite a handful of times. I'd say like three times, maybe more. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I would say.
But when we first met and we were doing the state park tour, we visited that park. Now, that was my first time visiting it ever. I think you had been there prior. And that was before I ever read the book. And then going back afterwards, reading her book, Cross Creek, that we'll talk about a little more, that describes the area. It's just made it all the more vivid experience. But even if you haven't read it, it's a wonderful place to visit and a time capsule of Florida past.
So I guess we'll start from who is Marjorie. Marjorie Kennan Rawlings is a Pulitzer Prize winning author, and she became famous about writing, I guess, the backwoods of Florida, would you say? Florida crackers, maybe? Or it wasn't just Florida crackers, just like the backwoods, the people that were often overlooked.
Yeah.
And the ones that inhabited, say, Cross Creek and Ocala National Forest, and she became very well known. Her most famous book, which was The Yearling, won the Pulitzer. And then she wrote Cross Creek, which was also famous, South Moon Under. South Moon Under is also about the area of Ocala National Forest. And Cross Creek Cookery, which is the only cookbook I've ever read from cover to cover. That's pretty interesting because she has a lot of little blurbs.
You don't typically read cookbooks.
No. But it's interesting that with some of her descriptions and commentary on her dishes. You know, she was a writer, her and her husband, Charles Rawlings. And they came to visit their brothers in Island Grove. Island Grove now is cross-sected by, I guess, 301. There's a little winery out there, but you don't see much of it. It was a little more bustling back then. It had orange packing houses, and it was a train stop and everything. But they get off there, and you know, it's like March. They live up in New York. The orange blossoms are out. You know, the weather's just perfect. And they said, hey, you know, Marjorie's like, hey, we can buy an orange grove here. And it'll sustain itself, and we can just write. It'll be so easy. That's what they did. They bought the farm sight unseen. It was a little bit more challenging than that. Yeah, oddly enough, she did make money off of it until she was an established author. And that's when it started bringing in. Ultimately, I think she about broke even on it. But it had a lot of challenges. And Marjorie did divorce, and she was out there by herself a little bit. So, she, you know, just managing the folks. And she was a pretty standoffish person. I've read a few books about her that were written by people that knew her at the creek. And she used a little bit of profanity and liked to smoke and drink some. So she was a very interesting character. She immersed herself in the culture, spent some time with the folks that lived in the Big Scrub, which is now Ocala National Forest. She did all the things they did, hunting, planting, a little bit of moonshining. She even wrote her editor saying, hey, you know.
During Prohibition?
I know.
What?
She's like, if I get picked up, it's research. But she did most of her writing right there in Cross Creek. After she wrote The Yearling, she became very well known. It was harder for her to sit in obscurity on her front porch or in the veranda, she would call it. And write. So it became a little bit more challenging. But she lived in a few places. Her and her second husband, Norton Baskin, they bought the Castle Warden Hotel, which is now Ripley's Believe It or Not, in St. Augustine. They also had a cottage in Crescent Beach. That's where the old sea turtle story that we'll probably mention later on comes from. And then she stayed at Cross Creek for most of the time. And ultimately, shortly before she passed, there was a place that she had up in, I believe, New York as well. But yeah, Cross Creek was home. So they have preserved the farmhouse at Cross Creek, and it's almost like she lived about the time when she lived there, and it's a state park now.
Do you think they ever sat on the porch after they moved there and looked and dropped a line, "Orange, you glad we moved here?"
Is that dad joke number one?
Dad joke. It's too early. It's too early for that.
It was an orange.
Gotta be
grove.
At least 3 o'clock. Yes.
I don't know. Is there any a wrong time for one of Chris's jokes?
Just happy I didn't say banana, right?
Jeez.
What was the other one? Oh, yeah. So unfortunately, she passed in 1953, and she donated, you know, the farm to the University of Florida, and she wanted to become a writer's retreat. Well, you know, those responsible college kids. They really didn't use it a retreat, maybe a little bit of a party place. The locals said they could hear him party. And in 1970, the University of Florida turned it over to the state of Florida. And so at that point, it became a state park. And when they did that, her maid Adela and her widow, Norton Baskin, had all of her belongings in storage. They took it out and they put everything exactly where it was. And that's how it is today.
And that's something really notable too, because you've got the a bunch of historic parks throughout the park system, and some of these like the Orman House and stuff like that, where they furnished it with these old
items that were donated to them from mm-hmm. people that were time period pieces from the from that whatever era they were going for, whatever era the house was built in, but not necessarily original pieces.
Having the specific items really makes it an outstanding experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a huge Marjorie fan. I go there and to see the china that she actually served at the dinner parties. One of my favorite things is, you know, it's Prohibition, and Marjorie had Mose Sykes, she writes about in the book Cross Creek, build a little hideaway in the attic for her to age her liquor, like liquor storage.
I mean, she didn't just put it in her bathtub, make her bathtub gin?
No, yeah. She didn't have a bathtub at first. Yeah, that took a while. Cross Creek, well, let's talk about her books. So she became famous for The Yearling, which she wrote about. It was a fictional story. It takes place in Ocala National Forest. She sold the rights to it early on to MGM for a movie. Gregory Peck went out there where she met with the folks and kind of embedded herself, and they filmed the actual movie there.
Now, we say it's fiction, but it's almost like a historical fiction where she did go there in person and talk extensively with a family who lived there at the time. And it's kind of bits and pieces of their real lives.
That was a tough existence.
Yeah.
Out in the middle of the big scrub in that day and age.
I'd have to look. I can't remember I get the Longs mixed up, but she hung out with a Long family. Mm-hmm. It may have been Reuben Long, I'm mm-hmm. thinking. He had a deer. And ultimately that it was a pet, and the family was concerned that it would eat up the vegetables. Now that was a serious thing because that was their food.
Yep.
If you had a pet that was eating your food, well, it had to go. But I think ultimately his yearling deer escaped and never came back, according to, I guess there's a little bit of a book that you can just read online. Cut a long, the long trek to the big scrub.
Mm-hmm. And you can read, learn more about that. We had recorded an episode in the past on the Ocala National Forest where we go into that a little bit further. If you would listen to past episodes.
The cemetery's still there.
Yeah.
That's a great plug. Cemetery. Yes. Listen to our other episodes. Leave a good review. So, yes. So Marjorie also wrote Cross Creek. Now, I'm a fan of nonfiction, and that is my favorite book of hers because it's like a memoir of her time at Cross Creek and interacting with the people in the area. And it's very, very interesting.
It's like a time capsule. I mean, she really captured what it was like to live in that cracker type setting all those many years ago.
It's amazing how folks lived back then.
Mm-hmm.
One part of the book, she's asking these kids, you know, what would you, if you had money, what would you get? And one kid's like, I think he said white bread, and like, you know, the rich kid, you know, kids eating. The other one, of course, said like a plug of tobacco. But, yeah.
I mean, they lived in like little shacks, like little lean-tos and stuff.
Yeah, I think I remember the character that lived out in the woods, more of a vagrant in the
wild book.
It's been a long time since I've read it, so feel free to correct me, Ryan.
Yeah. If one other book is called The Creek, and it's written by, I believe, J.T. Glisson. He was mentioned in the book Cross Creek, but he wrote his own book. And it mentions Marjorie, has some interesting stories about Marjorie. But it is also, he is a very good writer, and it's a fascinating, fascinating look at Cross Creek. And it's, you know, Marjorie wrote about her interactions with it, and he wrote about his, but his was a lot about the people there.
Mm-hmm.
And makes me want to explore it even more. It's a very interesting place. So her house is like a living museum. So if you go to the park, it has a few trails, but they're not like extensive. One's a small one that goes out
towards the back of the property, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the one I've mentioned before when we've had conversations about this, where there's a part of the book where she's talking about hogs tearing things up. If I remember right, and I could be wrong, I could have been told wrong because you weren't our guide. Someone else was.
Does the trail go out to where? Orange Lake? Can you see Orange Lake from the trail?
It's sort of. It goes out to there where it gets too wet to progress any further, but it's not like a nice sandy shore.
Right.
You're going through. There's a lot of cypress, and then, you know, it's almost like it's not a marsh, but it's you don't just get immediate access out mm-hmm. to it. There's channels and stuff. That would be a pig is paid for.
Okay.
So she had a problem with, so back then fence laws were different. If you wanted to keep livestock out of your yard, that was your responsibility mm-hmm. because they could roam free and you had to put up a fence. Well, there was somebody who had some hogs running around that were good about getting under her fence and would eat her skim milk. So
that's what it was.
The skim yes. milk she would put out for, I guess, I think the chickens or the animals, because that wasn't the good milk. You know, right. You had the cream, the bitty mash, those are chicken feed, and her fluffy ruffled petunias. That was unforgivable. So I think she said after multiple plantings, she had enough, shot the hog, had a barbecue with the hog, and then the owner came looking for it later on. And there's a very interesting longer story about how that was all reconciled, but it's very interesting. But yeah, she grabbed a 20 gauge and right off her porch took aim. And she said that was a ringleader of the pigs.
Yes.
And kind of tells you a little bit about Marjorie right there. You know?
She takes things into her own hands.
Yes. And so there's a lot of interesting stories. She had a raccoon that she had as a pet a little bit.
Who doesn't?
Yeah. Well, raccoons were popular.
Yeah.
I think one of the presidents.
Your father had one, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, my grandfather, but when my dad was a little kid. But yep. One of our presidents had a raccoon that someone gave them as a pet. So they're really popular around the 30s into the 50s. Because my grandfather had one when he was a kid, too.
Yeah.
Did he say much about it? Was it like just a
pet? Very mean. I've heard that they actually make terrible pets.
Because yeah, I hear they're great. And then like squirrels and other animals that I have a lot of friends who do animal rescues. Once they hit puberty, become quite more territorial and aggressive. So they don't stay good pets.
You know, it's funny. Carl Hyacin, who's a famous Florida author, wrote about how he got caught up and got one. And he said he scolded it once. And he's a writer. And he said he climbed on top of his typewriter and, as he stated, took a long, hard piss.
Yowzer.
Yeah. Marjorie's actually, she was good friends with the president of the University of Florida. And she had a dinner party and the raccoon climbed up on, I believe it was Edith Tigert, if I'm saying her last name correctly, on her shoulder. And she's like, oh, the raccoon likes me. And then he... He messed on her. I don't know if it was a number one or a number two, but Marjorie said he knew what he was doing and it was intentional. But sure. Funny enough, he got, you know, they had ice boxes back then where you would just take an ice box and you would put a block of ice. You had to get ice delivered. Well, he was able to get in there. And so
you didn't get the ice from John Gorey?
Maybe it came from John Gorey.
No, it was probably trucked from the north.
Didn't you say the machine would take a long time? You only get to crank for, you know.
Yeah, and those lobbyists putting into that. So. Yeah.
Well, if you make a pact with the devil, was it? You got good ice?
So a plug for another episode you can jump back to. Oh, if you want to learn more about John Gorey.
So basically, the raccoon climbed in her icebox and was sitting there eating the bacon. And when the iceman came, opened up the icebox to put the ice block in, out came Racket and scared him. And he screamed and Marjorie came running, you know. But yeah, I think Racket was a very appropriate name for the old raccoon. But yeah, those are some of the stories that she had, putting in indoor plumbing and everything. But it's the farm is there's some buildings that have been replaced. The barn, her original barn, was termites and humidity and wood rot in Florida, you know, act very quickly. So the barn was taken down. They did have some eyewitnesses and they recreated the barn. One of the gentlemen that worked on our farm said it was almost exactly how it was. Mm-hmm. The tenant house where some of our staff lived, that also decayed, but they brought another one over that was in the area, moved it across the road. The outhouse is no longer set, but they have one there that is a replica. There's a garden. Marjorie at one time took some duck eggs and put them underneath her chickens, who is, you know, broody or, you know, wanting to hatch some eggs, and out came ducks. So she had ducks on her farm. Those are still there today. There's chickens that roam around and a cat. She had a cat. She did have a dog, a pointer, if I'm not mistaken, but I could be wrong about that. No dog, though.
I remember the first time we visited that park, checking out the chicken coop and poking our heads in, and there was a yellow rat snake having a snack of some of the eggs.
Oh, really?
It was pretty cool to watch. It's
amazing how they can dislodge their jaw and just take on a whole giant egg like that.
Yeah.
The chicken wasn't happy.
No, the chicken was a little distressed.
Really? I had one. It was last year going across my yard, and he had the evidence right there in the middle of him. You know, I heard they can constrict and crack the egg, but it was still very evident. You know? I'm like, aha, I know where you've been, sir. No wonder I'm not getting that many eggs.
His, I was going to say fingers caught in the cookie jar, but no fingers, no cookie, no jar.
And he thought he was going to escape without anybody noticing.
Ah, look at that. That was that number two for the episode? Number two.
Yeah, I was going to say, too, you said the original barn got termites and stuff, so it was no longer in a stable condition.
Yeah, I think in the 1960s.
That was a good one.
Oh, I walked right into that one. So one interesting thing, and somewhat tragic, was I think one of the first people that Marjorie had met was Zelma Kaysen. And she writes about her. She was a local, and she writes about her early on in Cross Creek in the chapter of the census. Now, she described Zelma as a ageless spinster and an angry, inefficient canary. And Zelma did not like that and then filed a lawsuit. And Marjorie won early on, but Zelma appealed, and it went all the way to the Florida Supreme Court. Ultimately, she said it was an invasion of privacy. And it was a 5-year court battle, somewhere around there. Zelma ultimately won, and she was awarded $1. But Marjorie had to cover up the legal expenses, which were very extensive. And it caused Marjorie a lot of stress. She wrote about how much stress it caused her. And ultimately, she never wrote about Florida after that. She wrote one more book, The Sojourner. And then, she passed away after that, right around in Flagler County due to a cerebral hemorrhage. She was pretty young. She was in her late 50s when she passed. But, you know, Marjorie liked her Lucky Strikes, her liquor. And if you read her cookbook, she had her own Jersey cow where she, you know, milked it and got the cream. And that was a lot.
I've heard it's a high, what's the word I'm looking for? Caloric.
Cholesterol, high calorie, saturated high caloric, fats.
Cookbook.
Yeah.
The one chapter with the turtles and the eggs.
Oh, well, that is in Cross Creek, but she, and I always hated this because.
They went to Flagler, I think.
Crescent Beach.
Yeah, that was probably where they had the cottage.
Yes. And she talks about riding a sea turtle into the sunset, probably into the moonset while it was finished laying its eggs, and then digging up the eggs and having them for a meal later on when she got home. And the way she describes it, it's just a sin because it makes you want to eat turtle eggs. But I mean, I would never, obviously. And I think they're even protected.
I think there's a recipe in the book with the turtle, right? Turtle or turtle eggs?
I'm not sure. There may be one on gopher tortoise. But
yeah,
I
think it was scrub chicken. Scrub chicken, yes.
Now, yes, but you know what she taught? Well, she was a conservationist because she did talk about what she say. If you're being responsible, you only take half the turtle eggs.
Yes.
So, yeah, I guess it's one of those things where, you know, now it's abhorrent. But back then, you know, hey, look, let's ride the turtle. And hey, there's half the eggs.
And that's dinner. Another thing to say about the book, too, just to point out, if you're reading today, it is somewhat of a hard read. Some things don't age well, certain mm-hmm. kinds of language and phrasings and stuff that they called people back then would not be looked on highly today. But it is, you do have to kind of put it in the lens where for the time she was very progressive. And
it's really eye-opening, yeah. actually, in a yeah. way. when you hear the language in the book, it's when I first started reading it, it was very off-putting. Mm-hmm. And you have to come to realize that people talk that way. Like less than 100 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, that was something that was very complex, right? Mm-hmm. So the N-word is used in Cross Creek, unless later editions have omitted that, I'm not sure. But, you know, she thought she was being a bit progressive. She hired primarily African-Americans, which caused friction within the white community.
That they
Cross
were being
Creek.
Paid, right?
Well, no, they were being paid, but she said she paid them more than they would probably earn doing the same labor. But Marjorie, if you read Adela's book, she was very demanding, mm-hmm. right? Like Adela asked one day a week to go to church, and initially Marjorie threw a fit. And you're thinking, man, what is that, 7 days a week working? Yeah. And those were Marjorie's demands. And I'm sure she had the same expectations of her workers. In fact, you know, she writes in Cross Creek about, you know, the white community giving her a hard time. She hires one and the guy quits. Mm-hmm. You know, it was kind of like, I quit, you're fired. But it was, you know, that was something else. But she did become good friends with Zora Neale Hurston. Now, that really challenged Marjorie. Because she saw, like, you know, Zora is an equal, you know, not maybe somebody she's doing good and, you know, charitable works by paying people more and working them hard. But
and that wasn't the custom at that time.
No, I don't think so.
No.
There were certain rules, cultural rules there.
Yeah. Well, even here, not even that long ago, my grandfather grew up in Mims, or when my mom was younger, they lived in Mims.
You and mentioned even, that when you read that in that book.
Yeah, even he would not have a person of color go through his front door. That yeah. was a big no. And then this is in my lifetime, coming over with friends and him making a big deal and me telling him, you know, times have changed, old man. This is not how we act. So it's not even that long ago that people yeah. felt that that was okay.
And that was a very complex thing. If you read about some of Marjorie's, you know, there's they got some of her letters that they've released. She has Zora Neale Hurston come over. Zora comes over and the first time she spends the night, she stays in the tenant house with her African-American staff. The second time, Marjorie lets her stay in the guest room. Now, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that her staff was like, what are you doing? You know, the African-American staff are like, you know, you're going to upset some people and it's not going to be good for any of us. Mm-hmm. The same time, Marjorie was going through the lawsuit with Zelma Kaysen. And a lot of the locals, this was going through the local court system. So if she was doing something like that, it would put her lawsuit at risk. And she was very concerned about that. Ultimately, you know, say something about the folks at the Creek. Zelma Kaysen, I think, was talking to them. Hey, if you agree to testify on my behalf, you could also earn some money, you know, from the winnings of the lawsuit. And those were 25 very
25 cents of her dollar.
Well, you know, she was thinking she was going to yeah. get a big haul in. And those people were very poor. And nobody testified on Zelma's behalf. Zelma forced Marjorie to reexamine, I believe, how she saw race, and it really challenged her. And I thought that was very inspiring because, mm-hmm. you know what, we can take some stances, you know, early in life or see things a certain way. And you have events that, you know,
that change your point of view.
Yeah. And I think that was, I found that particularly inspiring. Not saying everything was perfect. I'm not saying I agree with the language in the book, which I do not.
I mean, it's a window to reality at the time. So, mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, I think changing it is it would alter that reality. And it's kind of an important thing to learn how people used to live.
Yeah.
Part of the time capsule yeah. aspect.
Yes. I don't know. That is a very long debate and discussion. And I would love to, and to have that, I would have to hear from somebody that would probably, you know, maybe a person of color that did not agree. And I'd love to hear their point of view on it, but that is a completely other thing. And I don't even think our podcast handles anything of that nature, but yes. So that is an interesting aspect. So if you go there to Cross Creek, you know, they have the Yearling restaurant, which has traditional like backwoods food, frog legs, venison, gator, very quaint setting.
Yeah, I had their venison. You took us there, actually. We had tried to go there quite a few times. And just, I think the timing of twice when we went to the park was during some sort of holiday to where it wasn't actually really open. You could walk through, but there were no guided tours or staff on hand. So the restaurant was also closed. I think once it was like a Sunday and the restaurant was closed. And so finally when we went to the restaurant with you and got to just recently. Yeah, just and that sandwich, that was that venison sandwich. It was delicious.
Yeah. The decor in there is really interesting.
If you like taxidermy. Not that anyone likes taxidermy, but if you like taxidermy, that's a place to be.
it kind of looks like almost modeled after like nature centers, how they have like the panther and the scenery of what it looked like.
Well, all that, that's native wildlife to Florida. In fact, the gentleman that donated all that, he was one of the ones that started the Florida Master Gardener program. He's a local legend. He was a docent over at Marjorie Kenning Rawlings. He wrote a book that was kind of like the guide. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like it's almost a study guide to Cross Creek. So if you are a tour guide there, that is the book to read. Very interesting gentleman. Definitely Cross Creek is a great place to go. If you go to the farm, you know, they still keep the garden up. The grove is there. You can grab some of the fruit. Not that you want to grab like a sack or a bushel of oranges. Some of them are sour. Some of them are good.
You know, I read they encourage you to pick an orange if you go there. You'd have to be asked by the ranger or something. You don't want to just go do it yourself.
Well, I mean, I don't think I've ever stopped anybody from picking an orange when I was volunteering or even looked at them sideways. I mean, when I go there, I know which ones taste good, or I'll ask the staff to get another thing. It's like, is this a sour one? Is this a good Hamlin orange? And they'll say, yeah. So I'm tall.
They're like, yeah, that's a good one.
Native Snickering Florida
in the background, waiting for you to take a big sour bite.
Yeah, I've done that a few times.
One right there.
Yeah. Now, if you go into the woods, there's some orange trees out there growing because her groves have just, the forest has reclaimed where her groves are. So it's very thick woods with some trails going through it. But the oranges out there are the descendants from her orange trees. So the sour oranges that you have out there are, they're just exactly that. It's very interesting. But I think that is about it. We have any other things?
One thing, and I know we're running short on time, but they do that event that you volunteered for, is that an annual event recently where the Front Porch Backsteppers were there?
Marjorie's birthday.
Okay.
Yes. Around early August. I believe it's the first weekend in August, if I'm not mistaken. Check the website for details. Or the Friends of Marjorie Kenning Rawlings State Park. They're the ones that have like really up-to-date information. But they celebrate her birthday. Usually the Front Porch Backsteppers, who do our logo music, and I believe played at your wedding.
Yes, played at our wedding. And they're also, in the past, have been frequented at some Florida Trail events. That's how they got on our radar.
Yeah. So they're great. They play some music, but they were there the last 2 years. It's really an interesting event. A little bit in the heat of, early August in Florida. But they usually make they take the recipe from Cross Creek Cookery. They make her mango ice cream. And usually there's snacks and, you know, light refreshments. And they give like a big tour of the house. That is right before they do like a 2 month shutdown. Every year from early August to early October is 2 months where they go in and they just do like a deep cleaning, because you gotta have like what, tens of thousands of people going through there a year,
right?
Walking through this house, and it just, you know, everything needs to be restored, because if that stuff is damaged or it not kept well, that's Marjorie's belongings.
Yeah, I had to look it up. You were saying beginning of August. She's a Leo. Oh. August 8th.
Something you guys have in common.
I never even thought about that. All right. If you want to see a historic farm that is really made an imprint on Florida's heritage, that is the place to go. And this is what, about 30 minutes away from Gainesville, I think. But it's between Gainesville and Ocala, kind of.
The whole area is really beautiful. Well,
there's a lot of things to do there. You got Micanopy, you have Paynes Prairie, Gainesville, all really close. So it'd make a great day trip. But yeah, definitely stop by.
Yeah, and again, just because it's happened to us a number of times, just keep in mind if it's a major holiday, they won't be doing tours. Maybe check their website before you head that way if that's something you want to do.
Yep.
And make sure they're running or give them a call. Typically, that's the best thing to do with the state parks, is to call them and speak to a ranger, because sometimes things don't make it onto the website.
Yes, and on that one, they don't have someone manning the phones all the time.
Right.
So you'll probably have to leave a message, and if you do, then they will call you back. They're pretty good about that.
And if it appeals to you, reading the book first before visiting really does add to it.
Yeah.
If you read Cross Creek before you go and you really, and the book resonates with you, to me, it was like a pilgrimage. Mm-hmm. If you watch the movie Cross Creek and go, you will be disillusioned.
We haven't seen the movie. Yeah. We heard it's pretty corny Hollywood.
We've said we'll watch it someday. And I hear her widow plays a character in it, like at a gas station attendant.
Yeah, he makes a very brief cameo. So I was doing tours and I had so many people like reference the movie and asked about how it is. So I went and watched the movie. I bought the DVD and I said, okay, I got to be able to speak to this. So it wasn't done in bad taste, but when you take a book, you just cannot make it into like a 2-hour movie. It's almost impossible. So they do what I've seen across multiple movies that I've seen where I've read a book that was nonfiction and they made it into a movie. They took one character, and he was actually not even a major character in the book, but they attributed things that other folks did that actually happened to that one character. Yeah. So she has like this.
But movie adaptations of that time, that's kind of a common thing.
Yes. They did not use our house. They used a actual, it looks like it's Lakeside House. The house there in that movie nowhere near looks like mm-hmm. the farmhouse. It looks like it's kind of in a swampy, kind of alongside the lake. Her widow, Norton Baskin, makes a brief cameo because as she's asking for directions in like Micanopy is where it was filmed, you know, the town scene, you know, he points her in a direction. Oh, you're looking for Norton Baskin. He's just down there. And then the way she meets Norton Baskin is definitely not the way that, you know, she met him in real life and everything. So it's interesting. But if that is your basis for Cross Creek, you're going to go and you'd be like, what is this? Oddly enough, I noticed that there's this really nice plates and whatnot that they'll use to, if we have like snacks and stuff, they'll put them on them. And I said, you know, this looks pretty nice. Is this wasn't Marjorie's, because we wouldn't eat on Marjorie's mm-hmm. original stuff. That's, you know, just no way. And they're like, no, when they filmed the movie, they gave it was from the set and they gave it to us. And they use it to this day. So also very notable as time goes on. But the movie was made, you know, about 40 years ago. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And as always, enjoy Florida responsibly.
Thank you for listening to the Florida Madcaps. We hope today's episode was enjoyable. Your input is important to us. If there is a topic that you would like to know more about, please let us know. The Florida Madcaps is presented in partnership with the Florida Springs Council, the only nonprofit advocacy organization focused solely on protecting our Florida Springs. Get a free spring sticker and join the Florida Springs Council at floridaspringscouncil.org/madcaps. As a token of our appreciation, we are giving away a free Madcap sticker to anyone who leaves us a review. All you have to do is send us your contact information to the email provided in our show notes. We will take care of the rest. Thank you for being a part of the Florida Madcaps community.